There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's Coolest Conversations podcast time at Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. This is the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this time around is guitarist, singer, and frontman Danny Dunlap of the Austin, Texas band Gentlemen Rogues. Their latest single, Do the Resurrection, is a recent coolest song in the world, so let's give a listen to some of that now, and then I'll be back to chat with Danny about it and the band on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time now for your Friday's Coolest Conversations. Joining me is Danny Dunlap, who sings, plays guitar, and fronts Gentlemen Rogues from Austin, Texas. And their latest single, Do the Resurrection, is this week's coolest song in the world. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Have you managed to stay healthy over this past year?
I have. I've been doing really good. I've been working from home, and only pretty much going to the grocery store and back and wearing a mask when I do. And yeah, I mean, I can't believe it's been going on for a year. I remember at work, they sent us home to work for a while and they said it would be for 2 weeks. And now here we are almost a year later and it's still happening. But yeah, knock on wood, I've been healthy and staying safe and all that. So thank you.
Well, that's great. My my routine is pretty similar to that. I guess the difference is that I've normally worked from home. So for the first few weeks, it was like, well, there's not that much that's different that's going on, except when I would go out to the grocery store, then it was like going, it was like suddenly I was in a Twilight Zone episode.
Right.
And then as time goes on, it sinks in that the being able to do things with the band, you know, is the, mm-hmm. the kibosh has been put on that.
Yeah.
How about your friends and family? They're all healthy as well?
Yeah, everyone. I don't actually know anyone who has contracted COVID. Like, no, I don't know anyone personally. So everyone that in my immediate family and friends and stuff have all been okay.
Wow, that's terrific. Now, the band, the Gentlemen Rogues, that's from Austin, right? You're there in Austin. Where do you hail
from
originally?
Like me personally?
Yeah.
I'm a Texas boy born and raised. I was born in Houston and I moved from there when I was 4. And then I grew up in a little town called San Angelo, Texas, which is about 3 hours west of Austin. And I've lived in Austin since the year 2000. I moved here January 9th, 2000, right after we survived Y2K by the skin of our teeth.
What got you playing guitar?
You know, it's funny because it's so not reflective of the way I play guitar, but I had a childhood friend named Tucker who started playing guitar when we were in like eighth grade, probably. Mm-hmm. And I saw that. I thought that was cool, but I actually didn't start playing guitar until I was 17. And what inspired me to do it was probably Dinosaur Jr. It was something I just listened to Dinosaur Jr. so much, and I was like, I want to do that. But nowadays, I couldn't play a guitar solo to save my life, really. So it's kind of interesting that was my inspiration. It's kind of what he's known for.
So you started playing in your later teens. Was there much music in the home, the household, when you grew up?
Strangely, not at all. My family, my brother and I were big music nerds from a very early age. I have an older brother who's about 4 years older than me, named David, and he would turn me on to music because he was older. You know, when he was in high school, sophomore in high school, I was still in like sixth grade elementary school. So he would show me stuff and he turned me on to lots of cool music when I was, you know, fifth or sixth grade. He was introducing me to the Sex Pistols and the Clash and stuff like that when I was still in elementary school. So I had the fortunate that I have an older brother to turn me on to cool music when I was too young to probably properly understand it.
So you grew up there in Texas, really very close to Austin. It's often, you know, referred to as being the music capital of the world.
Yep.
Can you imagine yourself anywhere else making music?
I can, especially these days. And I'm going to sound like the grumpy guy, but Austin's changing a whole lot. It's changed a whole lot, especially in the last 5 years. It's getting more and more to what I kind of feel like Los Angeles maybe is like. So Austin's a great city for so many things, but it's changed in a way that what I really, really loved about it is kind of like dissolving. So these days I kind of think about living in somewhere where there's mountains, maybe Colorado, maybe Pacific Northwest up in Washington or something. So I don't know if making music specifically, but just kind of living in a different place has been appealing.
Well, what is dissolving to you in the Austin scene? What is the big change? How is it more like becoming more like Los Angeles?
Not necessarily like the music scene specifically, but just the Austin's famous right now for just people are just moving here, like, just in droves, you know. So
right.
Traffic is just like getting terrible. Just going anywhere is like, you know, used to take like 10 minutes to drive to the other side of the city, and now it's like an hour to go somewhere you want to go. And it's just kind of like, it's just changed in a lot of ways where things are more difficult than they used to be. And I think it sounds like, you know, I'm whining, and I'm kind of whining, but you know, I guess growing, living here for so long and knowing Austin when it wasn't that way, you know, you kind of go, ah, God, it's like, it's kind of changing for the worse, you know? So I don't know. It's kind of a bummer, but that being said, you know, Austin's such a cool place. There's so much to do here. There's lots of great restaurants and there's, you know, beautiful
great culture,
people are cool. The culture is great. Yeah. So there's so much good stuff about it too.
When you were in our non-pandemic world, if we can remember those times,
right?
You know, of course, there is a great scene there overall, and people go out. And but did you play most of your shows in town, or did you play most of your shows out of town? Did you do much touring?
We did. We've done some touring. We actually did some touring in the UK a couple of times, and we've done some US touring. But we did start out playing just kind of locally and maybe regionally around Texas, going to Houston and Dallas and like the DFW area. We've done some touring, but I would say probably the majority of our, you know, live shows have been probably local or regional.
Well, give me an idea. When did Gentlemen Rogues actually get together? Around 2010?
Yeah, it's been a while. Sounds like we've been a band for forever, and I guess technically we have, but it seems like our output doesn't reflect that. But yeah, we kind of formed around 2010. We've never broken up, but we've had some sort of like dormant periods where maybe there was like a shakeup in the lineup where we needed a new bass player. Our bass players are like Spinal Tap's drummers. We've gone through quite a few of them, and for reasons we don't fully understand. But we've been around for probably 10 years, which is crazy. 9 years.
Well, how did you guys find each other initially?
Our original drummer was a guy named Matt, and he worked at this coffee shop that I used to go to on my way to work. And he and I just sort of like over time learned that we had a just a lot of music things in common, and a band that I had was in called The Fall Collection. We had broken up maybe a year prior, and Matt and I just kind of were like, hey, we should get together and start playing and try it out. And we did. And then I had my friend Corden played guitar. So I was like, hey, you want to get in on this? And and we just kind of like sort of happened very organically and really slowly, which maybe contributes to why it seems like we've been a band for a million years. We were a band for a year and a half before we ever played a show, you know, so I don't know. So yeah, it just all kind of happened, just meeting someone new who we kind of shared some common interests, and then kind of recruiting friends to kind of come into it once we saw that, hey, this, you know, could actually work. And then Josh Power, who is our current drummer, the greatest drummer name, Josh Power. He and I used to play in The Fall Collection together. So when Matt left the band, I asked Josh if he wanted to join, and he did. And he's been in the band way longer than he hasn't. So I kind of see Josh as sort of always been our drummer.
Right. Well, you're used to looking over and seeing him behind the kit.
Yeah. And he's a great friend and all that stuff too.
When was the last time you guys were all in the same room?
Not that long ago, honestly. We've been periodically doing, or intermittently doing, some rehearsing, kind of wearing masks and sitting on opposite corners of the room, and just kind of working on new music and stuff. And so, I mean, 2 weeks ago was probably the last time we were all together.
Well, cool. Now, you mentioned this, or alluded to, you know, over the course of the band, not a lot of releases, and looking over the discography, you've got some EPs, singles, but there's never been a full length album yet.
Yeah.
Are you working towards that, or that just hasn't sort of materialized?
Well, that we had this idea that we were never going to make an album. We were only going to put out EPs. And I don't know, I think we were just sort of like, you know, people have short attention spans, and we'll just do these little releases of like 4 to 6 songs, and we'll do just, that's all we'll do. That was kind of like almost our, you know, our mantra or whatever. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but that's all we planned on doing. And then that's kind of changed in the last couple of years, where we're like, we should make an album. so we actually are making an album right now, and like we're writing, not actively recording it, but we're writing a new album, which we're maybe 3/4 of the way there with the songs. We have enough songs for the record and then some, but they're kind of in various stages of completion. So hoping to record a brand new record full length in maybe May. But we also have 2 of those older EPs that you'd mentioned are actually getting released onto 1 12-inch, and that's in the works right now, going to the pressing plant to be made this week. And that's going to be A History So Repeating, which came out originally on CD, and then another EP called Fatal Music that came out just digitally on like our Bandcamp. Uh-huh. But what's going to happen is we're combining those two to be 1 full length on colored vinyl. And the title of it is A History of Fatalism. So we combined the two titles and combined the songs, and it's going to be a 10 track record on a colored vinyl. And that's going to be released by Snappy Little Numbers out of Denver, Colorado, who did our Do the Resurrection single, and another label they're partnering up with called Rocket Heart Records out of Seattle they're going to co-release this 12-inch. So we're super psyched to not be a brand new record, but it'll be the equivalent of a full-length album, and to hopefully tide people over until our brand new full-length gets recorded and made later this year.
Oh, terrific. Well, looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Let's talk some about the new single, Do the Resurrection. Mm-hmm. Came out this past December on Snappy Little Records. I mentioned also it's our coolest song in the world this week. Now, I remember reading that you had recorded it last February, a year ago now. Can you give us a story on when and where you did it and how it wound up on Snappy?
Yeah, so Snappy Little Numbers put it out. Coincidentally, we were recording this song 1 year ago today. We were in the studio February 1st and 2nd of 2020, recording these two songs that are on the single. And we recorded it with our friend Kevin Butler, and we did it at a studio kind of Right, not outside of Austin, but kind of way off on the outskirts of Austin, a studio called Austin Signal. And Kevin was doing some engineering there, as well as he has a home studio, and he was kind of raving about Austin Signal and said, we should do it at this place. And we did, and we're really happy with the way it turned out. But we recorded it a year ago today, strangely.
Well, I want to tell you that even though the single technically came out last year, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that even this year in 2021, nobody's going to come up with a better couple of lines than you have in your tune. Those lines, don't want to crawl from a grave, don't want to eat your brains, just want to know the thoughts buried in your mind. That's so lovely.
Thank
I
you.
mean, that is really, really cool. Tell me how you came up with this ditty.
This ditty. So this was kind of like a writing exercise, is the way I'm going to describe it. There's a guy who's based out of Canada, out of Toronto, I think, and he goes under the name Marvelous Mark, which you'd think he would be like in hip hop or something, but he does this. He was in a band called the Marvelous Darlings, and he kind of went and did these solo records called Mar where he's going under Marvelous Mark. And his songs, even though I think he's capable of a lot more, he seems like he's deliberately writing these really simple songs that are, three chords, big muff pedal, really catchy, lots of harmonies, and they're just really simple songs. So I have a tendency to try to do too much, and I have to try to edit myself. So I this writing exercise was I'm gonna try to write a Marvelous Mark song, and I'm gonna set that as sort of my perimeter of like, what would Marvelous Mark do? I just want to have a couple of chords and see how simple I can make this. And so the original version of the song was really simple, probably too simple. And then once the band, starts getting involved, and John, who plays guitar with us, who's an amazing guitar player, he's talking about Thin Lizzy one day in practice, and I'm like, oh, why don't you come up with write a Thin Lizzy guitar solo for this? And we just sort of built on this really simple idea, and that's kind of that's how it started. So I know I just kind of rambled, but it originally was a kind of like, let's see if I can write a Marvelous Mark type of song, and that was kind of where it started. And then it, obviously got a little bit more complicated. But overall, I think it's still like a three chord kind of pop song. So.
Well, so when I first saw the title, Do the Resurrection, I was wondering if there was going to be any, specific religious imagery to it, right? Or we think of resurrection. Are you a fairly religious person at all, or your family growing up?
Oh, that's a we're getting risque. No, I'm not. My all of my family is. I'm kind of like the black sheep of my family, where I'm sort of the one who isn't religious really at all, but all of my family is.
Now, you've done a number of interviews to promote the single. Have you guys done any online or virtual shows?
We haven't. 50% of our band is not really wild about the idea of live streams and those things. And I'm sort of on the fence with it. I think playing live is probably one of my favorite things about being in a band, and playing live to like a computer or to a crowd that's like maybe watching you on the other side of a computer is. It just seems kind of depressing in a way, and maybe if we were like a really popular band and everybody loved us and I knew people were watching it, it would feel like something different. But it also is like playing live and being in a room with an audience, and that energy that's kind of exchanged between, even if there's only 10 people there, you still feel a connection to like what's happening. And playing where people are like watching it through their computer, it just seems kind of sad to me. Like, I respect people for doing it if that's your thing, like, and you want to do it, like, go nuts. But for me and some of the other guys in the band, we're kind of like, it just seems like I just don't know if I have any interest in that. We did make a music video. That's kind of our solution to the not getting to play live, is we made a video for Do the Resurrection that's going to be coming out maybe next week.
Oh man, I'm sorry that we've missed that. I would love to check that out. Can you describe to me what the video's about?
We did it with our friend Daniel Freed, who plays he's a musician himself. He has his own band called TV's Daniel. He also plays in a band called Radioactivity, a band called Dracula's. So he's kind of a part of a lot of these kind of Texas bands, kind of punk bands and stuff. Super sweet guy. And we talked about making a video, and we're kind of like we didn't want to get too like literal with the lyrics and stuff. So he kind of came up with this idea where we would sort of have just a steady camera that was just like on a tripod. We'd shoot it in a few different locations, and then he would manipulate all the people in the band, with the exception of me, kind of going in like slow motion. Someone like the drummer's going backwards, the bassist is like moving in slow motion, John's on guitar, he's all fast forwarded, so everyone's kind of moving at different times. We kind of touched on the idea of resurrection. Like we were trying to be like, well, what I'll kind of fall out of the shot, or I'll leave the shot, and then when I come back in, I'm wearing like different clothes and I'm playing a different guitar, so it's kind of like this new version of me. But I don't know how well that was communicated, and you'll see it, but it's we weren't trying to get too like highbrow about it.
Well, I think that's way cool, man. Coming up with videos, I mean, some bands are just really great at this, from personal experience, my own projects, not so much. And so the videos are pretty few, very few and far between. But I got to hand it to, there's a lot of folks that seem to be really good about that. And then, just very bare bones stuff. And it looks great, you know?
Daniel did a great job. It looks really good. I've shown it to a few people, and they're just like, whoa, it looks really pro. And it might be awesome. It's being like the singer in a band and being kind of the focal point is sometimes I'm not like 100% comfortable with it. Like it's kind of weird to watch yourself on in a video and know that you're kind of singing along to a pre-recorded song, and just you get kind of self-conscious about it or whatever. Or I do.
Oh yeah. Here's something. I got a couple more questions for you here. We're going to talk about the B side in a moment. In fact, thinking about the B side for a second, you've performed with the Lemonheads, and After Fashion, you cover their tune "Bloody Rudderless" on the B side. You've also shared the stage with a lot of other cool bands. I was just wondering, is there some hero band of yours that once the pandemic is over, you would just give anything to play a show with?
Oh man, I mean, hero band.
Yeah, like a really, like somebody like, oh my God, if I could ever play with this band or share a stage with this band, that would be sort of the pinnacle of my own personal sort of
I would love to play. I'm just things that are coming off the top of my head, like music heroes. Elvis Costello would be great to like open for him. Paul Weller, if especially if he did like a jam reunion, which he won't ever do because he hates all that stuff. But Johnny Marr would be cool to open for. I love the Smiths and Johnny Marr's solo stuff, and although he has questionable politics, Morrissey's I'm a big fan of.
Well,
I
hey,
mean maybe
Manny, you're hitting on a lot of English guys,
yeah.
so that's pretty central to your sort of music tastes and loves. Is that
Absolutely.
okay? Does that relate back to your brother bringing home the Sex Pistols, and you're thinking, well, let me find some other English guys and coming up with a jam or what?
I mean, probably. I never really thought about that, but probably why I have an affinity for the British punk and a lot of the bands from that era was probably was because of my brother. Yeah, the Clash and the Buzzcocks and Sex Pistols and all that stuff. And then I got into then kind of finding like the American versions of that stuff, or like the punk stuff from the 80s, like all the SST Records bands, Descendants and Black Flag and Husker Du and all that stuff. Like once I got bit by that kind of punk bug, I just like it, I was obsessed from that point forward, starting at the age of 11 or 12 years old.
So have you mentioned playing in the UK? Mm-hmm. Have you ever played in Spain?
No, I wish that we had, because I love Spain. I've only been there once, but Barcelona was a place that, and within 15 minutes of being there, I was like, I want to live here someday. It was just like this, what's that called? Like a soul. What do you call that when you're like soulmate? It was like my soulmate city or something. I just felt like I belong here. but I've never played there. My girlfriend and I went there to just for vacation a few years ago, and that's where I met Dan and that bar that I can't think of the name of, the Milky Way bar. I think it was
right. Wait, was that in Madrid?
Yeah, in Madrid. So La Via Lactea, I think, was the name of it.
Something
yeah.
like that. I think you're yeah. right about that. And when you mentioned Dan, you're talking about Dan Electro from the Woggles. And,
correct.
And the reason I asked you about Spain is because I have this great rock and roll culture, and I know that you guys just yeah. happen to have met each other there. Were you yeah. aware of this rock and roll culture that they have in Spain?
I was aware of it, which is not solely why we wanted to go visit Spain. I mean, I would go back to Spain just to eat. I mean, just the food was amazing.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I knew that rock and roll was a huge thing there, that the scene, like the culture of rock and roll was really big there. And Kurt Baker is kind of a guy who not close friends with, but sort of like online buddies with. And I knew he lived there, and that he was having like a lot of cool stuff, you know, involved in a lot of cool stuff with just the rock and roll scene there. When I was in Spain, I was like messaging with Kurt a lot while I was there, just being like, hey, what's a good, like, I'm in Madrid, like, what's a good restaurant to go to? Or what's, you know, and he would like message me back, oh, you should check out this place. And then I was like, this is funny. I'm not like great friends with Kurt, but he and I actually talked a whole lot while I was in Spain through the interwebs.
that is way cool. That is way cool. And yeah. and he would be, I mean, you know, he's lived there for a while now.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in his band over the Kurt Baker combo, the Juancho, and I can't think of Juancho's last name, but this guy is not only just, you know, he's playing with Kurt, he's a musician in his own right and has his own projects, but he also road manages when, you know, like American bands or other bands from other countries come to Spain.
Okay.
And he knows all the great places all over the country to eat, just really out of the way, unusual places to go. So that was the man to hook you up for sure.
Yeah, he was super sweet, super helpful. I mean, I got so into the idea of moving to Spain that I think even some of my questions with Kurt, like when we were messaging back and forth, was like, so how would one go about, you know, moving here? That he was like, we'll talk about it later. it's complicated, but yeah, he was a sweetheart. He's answering all my questions.
We spoke some about, you know, the A-side, Do the Resurrection. That's the new single. And we got to give the B-side some love now. So it's titled Bloody Rudderless in Ursa Major. Mm-hmm. Quite a potent oral cocktail combining elements of the Lemonhead, Super Drag, and My Bloody Valentine. So tell me about the ratios there and and how you came up with it.
Oh man, this is a weird idea that worked out better than we could have ever imagined. But so yeah, it's a song. It's Rudderless by the Lemonheads off of their classic It's a Shame About Ray album. It's a little bit of Destination Ursa Major by Super Drag, which is off their debut Regretfully Yours, and then there's a little bit of a song called When You Sleep by My Bloody Valentine that kind of makes an appearance at the end. I just one day had this epiphany that all three of these songs shared a chord progression. They all shared like the same chord progression, and I always kind of thought that Destination Ursa Major had a little bit of a My Bloody Valentine-ish thing about it. So mm-hmm. I think that maybe started helping make that connection, and then realizing the chorus of Rudderless was that same three kind of ascending three chords. So I started just playing around with the idea of like combining them. So it was sort of like, well, why don't we take these droney guitar bends from the Super Drag song and we'll play them during the chorus of the Lemonheads song, which initially was just going to be a Lemonheads cover.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And it's like a little nod to Super Drag, even though it's not a Super Drag cover. And so like, that's kind of neat. And then I was always thinking that the bridge of the Lemonhead song was always kind of the weak part of the song. I just always thought the bridge was kind of, for lack of a better word, I just thought it was kind of lame. Like the bridge could be better. So we started kicking around the idea of like rewriting, like let's just write our own bridge for it. And with that didn't really work very well. So then I had the idea, like, why don't we take a chunk of the Super Drag song and make this more of kind of a hybrid cover where it's actually covering both songs sort of simultaneously, and which was like a really weird idea. But then we kind of figured it out how to kind of piece them together, and it was just like, holy crap, that sounds really awesome. And then we found that, you know, like, hey, let's take that little My Bloody Valentine guitar melody lick and we'll throw it into the end. So during the kind of outro guitar solo, you start hearing the My Bloody Valentine melody come in. It's not a medley. Someone described it as like an organic mashup, which I thought was kind of maybe a good way of describing it. But
yeah,
I think what's cool about it is I've never heard anyone do anything like that before. I'd like to think it's kind of a unique idea. But I think if you know the songs that it's made from, you will get a kick out of it. A lot of people say it kind of messes with your head a little bit. And they're like, yeah, it's weird. It kind of messed with me when I was listening to it. But then I also think if you don't know the three songs that it's made from, it just sounds like a cool song.
Cool song. Right, definitely. Yeah. After Jimi Hendrix had covered Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower, uh-huh. and Dylan was aware of it, then he just started playing it the way that Hendrix had arranged it. and then of course, after Hendrix's passing, now he would play it as a tribute to him. But he had already changed his arrangement based on the way that Hendrix had been playing it. You've already played with the Lemonheads. You think Evan Dando is going to pick up on this, or the Supergrass guy? Excuse me, the Super Drag guys.
That's funny. I'm wearing a Supergrass T-shirt as we speak.
There you go.
Super Drag. So here's a funny story. John Davis, who's the guitarist singer from Super Drag, I'm part of this Super Drag Facebook group because I'm a big fan of that band, and I posted and I'm a big music nerd, so I posted our cover into this Super Drag group and was just like, hey, you know, check this out. You guys might get a kick out of this. And it turns out that one of the guys in the group is the singer from Super Drag's cousin. Uh-huh. And he was like, this is crazy. This is so cool. I'm going to, you know, share this with John. So I ended up like doing a radio interview, and they ended up playing that cover and Do the Resurrection on this, this radio station in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is where Super Drag is from. And he sent the song to John, and John's response to it was a ha ha ha, that's weird. So I said, was that like, is that a good thing? And he said, yeah, I think that's a kind of a compliment. And I was like, okay.
I would take that as a compliment. Danny, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
Well, we're going to hear that B-side now. It's Bloody Rudderless in Ursa Major from Gentleman Rogues here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Waiting for something to break.
Some of Bloody Rudderless in Ursa Major from Gentleman Rogues here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's the B-side to their new single, Do the Resurrection, out on Snappy Little Numbers. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks once more to the band's frontman, Danny Dunlap, for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Next time, I'll be joined by Bob Ujahowski. He's the guitarist in the New Jersey trio The Insomniacs, who has also since started playing and recording with Palmyra Delran and the Dabble Gang. We'll talk about the new single with Palmyra and find out what else Bob has been up to on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.